And we're off.
Roughly 24 to 92 hours ago, Stab's team of comedy scientists commissioned four specific humorists to give various potentially comedic takes on several random topics, which they'll now perform for the first and likely last time in front of a live studio audience.
That's you guys.
In a show called Stab.
Oh my God. Well, keep it going, yes. Oh my God, welcome to Stab here at Piano Fight Theater, 144 Taylor Street in San Francisco, California. Are you ready to meet your contestants for Stab? All right, well, please welcome to the stage first, Mr. Ben Feldman. Ben Feldman, right there. Love you. Seat number one, Mr. Feldman. Seat number two, we have Shahara Hyatt. Shahara, right here. Welcome. Seat number two. And last but not least, we have Jesse Jones. Jesse Jones, right there. Right the hell there. Welcome, everyone. Nice to see you guys. My name is John Ross. I'm the host of Stab, but that doesn't matter right now because we're going to talk to these guys. Ben, thank you for being on Stab for a second time here in San Francisco.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here. Ben, I don't know if you knew this about Ben, but outside he told me that tonight is going to be a good old-fashioned bloodbath. That's what he said. No, he didn't say that, but we're glad he's here. Sitting next to him, we have Shahara Hyatt.
Shahara.
Am I messing it up?
Yeah, you fucked it up.
I did. Good start. Shahara. Shahara.
Woo, yeah.
Thank you. This is your first time on the show.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
Here.
I don't know if you knew this about Shahara, but she missed a spot. So, thank you for being here. This spot. Last but not least, now at the end, this gentleman's on every Stab show. We've done over 100. He's been on almost all of them.
It's true.
Jesse Jones, let's hear.
Hey
hear
there,
for Jesse Jones.
Hey everybody, you're all dark. I can't see you.
It's okay. It's all right. Jesse, I don't know if you knew this.
Probably not.
About yourself, but you just forgot what you were going to say.
Oh.
All right.
Good thing I brought pages.
All right, let's play Stab. There we go. Welcome. Yeah, I know. Really good. This first segment is called This Was Today Once. Ben Feldman. On this date, 1954, the anti-national service riots by Chinese middle school students in Singapore take place. Also on this date, 1939, Hildrun Klaus, German long jumper, was born. How did you celebrate these aforementioned topics in tandem?
Well, first let me start by saying that the random article link is my favorite feature on Wikipedia too, John.
Oh, great, wonderful.
Well, besides the ability to search for stuff people can relate to.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I've mentioned this yet, but let me reiterate the importance of the Singapore Chinese thingy. Because it led to some very great things. I don't know why. In fact, the success of the anti-national service riots by Chinese middle school students in Singapore on May 13th, 1954, led to the formation of the Singapore Chinese Middle School Students Union.
Oh, my God.
Okay? I think we can all agree, John, modern Western culture would not be the same today if that hadn't happened. Hey, you want to erase the Beatles from history? Take a trip back to Singapore in 1954 and put a stop to those Chinese middle school riots. Also, you're right, John, that German chick Hildrun Klaus was born 15 years prior on May 13th.
Right.
And was a long jumper. In fact, she married a dude.
Did she?
As luck would have it, I've been celebrating the co-occurrence of these two events for as long as I can remember since I found out about them last week. So it's actually quite serendipitous, John, that you should assign this one to me. It's as if you've been reading The Secret, John. But not just reading it, but actually believing it with might.
Right. Yeah.
But in case there's any doubt that I'm joking, I do in fact celebrate the anti-national service riots by Chinese middle school students in Singapore and the birth of German long jumper Hildren Klaus on the same date 15 years prior. And not the shallow, ignorant way most people do with the Kiss Me, I Long Jump t-shirts and the streusel and the yellow beer. No, I take these events very seriously. All right, this time of year, I always make a point to visit the International Museum of Chinese Protests and German Sports.
Right.
Along the Rhine River in the Sichuan Valley, just south of Market Street. They have all sorts of games and activities. For example, you could pretend to refuse to register for the Singaporean National Defense Service or run and do a long jump. You can try on different outfits like 1930s German maternity clothes and pretend you're giving birth to a future Olympian. Or you can put on the types of clothes Chinese students wore in 1950s Singapore. There's a video arcade for no reason. And a toilet in the courtyard, in case you're there so long you need to take a dump. And trust me, John,
yep.
You're going to be there a while. You know why? You know why?
Why?
Because the line's out the door, John.
Like tonight. That's good.
In conclusion, Hildren Laufer Klaus was paralyzed in 1995 as a result of a sports-related accident.
Very good, Ben Feldman. Thank you for telling us how you would celebrate. Ms. Hyatt? Mm. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Good. On this date, 1848, the first performance of Finland's national anthem was heard for the first time. Also on this very date, 1928, Jim Shoulders, American rodeo rider, was born. How did you choose to celebrate the aforementioned topics combined?
Well, I started the day by taking a nap after reading possibly the least fun fact I've ever heard. And then when I woke up, I got a tattoo on my hand that says, "This ain't my first rodeo," one word on each finger. So every time that men talk down to me about shit I know way more about than they do, I can just wave my magic hand in the air and make them disappear. Then I went online and I learned that Finland's national anthem is spelled like a phonetic version of Cartman's pronunciation of mom. I also learned that Finland is a country in Europe. That was a fun fact. The tune of Mom has similarities with the German drinking song Papst und Sultan. And some believe the composer actually intentionally copied the song. And why wouldn't you? Because who cares? Come on, it's Finland and no one's really paying attention. He was just trying to get to the finish line. Thank you.
Very good.
This is my first rodeo.
Very good. This is not. Jesse Jones.
Yeah.
On this date, 1958, the trademark for Velcro is registered. Also on this date, 1966, Darius Rucker, American singer, songwriter, guitarist, Hootie and the Blowfish, was born. How did you choose to do it?
Well, today I actually came to a sad, soul-crushing realization. I'm never going to be rich and famous. Please, no, please, hold your shocked gasps. Or your dismissive hisses. I, Jesse Jones, am never going to be a household name. Hell, I can't even get the Twitter handle I want because it's held by some pizza guy in Saskatchewan who hasn't tweeted since 2011. But finally coming to this conclusion has brought in itself a certain kind of freedom. Because if my name is never going to make me any money, maybe I can make it from the names of others. It's with that thought in mind that I spent the day trademarking any conceivable band name, product logo, or random assorted squiggles that came into my mind in the hopes of making piles of ill-deserved money cash when someone else gets famous. I started naturally trying to trademark Blowfish. Not surprisingly, it was already taken. In its place, I chose Suckbird. Okay. Available. Trademark Jesse Jones Industries. Feeling this sudden rush of power, I set my mind loose on trademarking anything and everything that came to it. I trademarked the semicircle. If you ever start drawing a circle and then just stop, you owe me money. Aluminum Ambush, She Shoots the Stars, Monkey Stank. If you ever see a band with any of those names, know that I'm doing well. A drawing of a sunset, three circles touching but not intersecting, the seven-pointed star, all mine! At some point, I just started trademarking random assortments of letters, expecting that I'd probably accidentally come up with a name for a future commercially advertised prescription drug. Flavisiex. Juvisium. Zyre Tuvalor. And actually, three out of every five that I attempted to trademark were already existing prescription drug names, so I feel like I got a pretty good shot at those. Then I turned to juvenile pranks and projects for inspiration, trademarking penis shapes crudely drawn in Sharpie on the foreheads of passed out friends. Elementary school hand outline Thanksgiving turkey designs. That's mine now. And finally, I did trademark John Ross today. Yeah. Not that I think it'll be worth anything someday. It's just, if I'm going down, I'm taking you with me.
Very good. Jesse Jones, this was Today Once. And it brings us to our next segment. Called Reorganization. That's a fan favorite. Gentlemen and lady, please take this existing acronym, reimagine it, what does it now stand for, and who or what does it now represent. In celebration of Axl Rose becoming the new frontman of AC/DC, today's acronym is ACFNR. ACFNR. Ben Feldman, what does ACFNR mean to you?
Well, most people, John, think it stands for alternating current / fucking roses.
Okay.
But only because that's what's on all the tour merch. When what I know in my heart to be true about the hidden meaning of AC/FNR, since Axl Rose and I share a bathroom tile guy, and my bathroom tile guy says Axl told him it stands for always keep fucking rocking.
Okay.
And told him not to tell anyone. Keep with a C.
Very good. Ms. Hyatt, I'm trying to not mispronounce your first name, and I'm cheating. What does ACFNR mean to you?
Well, this acronym is actually really near and dear to my heart because it's the name of the gang I was in middle school. My friend Jackie was always crushing on boys, but I was more of a fan of East Coast gangster rapper DMX, and I wanted to pay homage to the 1998 hit that was popular that year, Rough Riders, which I considered myself to be a part of. We couldn't decide on a single name for our gang, so instead of breaking up, we went with something that would capture both of our identities. Always crushing, freak nasty riders.
Very good. That's a good gang. Very good.
Stay sure. Crushing.
Keep it crushing. Jesse Jones, what does AC/FNR mean to you?
Well, I hope your taste buds are ready for a trip to the farthest west of the east. Because AC/FNR is actually the quick and easy shorthand for the new fusion cuisine menu now being offered at Steve San's Greasy Chopstick. Steve San's special blend of Asian, Caucasian, Franks and Rice. Steve San has all of your favorite yellow and white dishes, from egg salad rolls to American cheese wonton, and everywhere in between. Try some of Steve San's delicious starters, like French fry chow mein or Mushu Cheetos. Want something to share? Why not try General Doug's six-piece chicken nuggets? That's six pressed rib meat nuggets dipped in General Doug's world-famous Nutella glaze. But don't fill up before you get to the main course. Whether it's the sweet and sour bacon western cheeseburger, the Coney Island teriyaki hot dog, or the Kung Pao fish sticks with peanut butter and jelly sauce, Steve San has something for everyone. Maybe sushi's more your style. Well, see, Steve San's got you covered there, too, with a wide variety of specialty rolls, like the Lil Smokies roll, the Twix roll, or our most popular item, the pizza roll.
So come on down to Steve San's Greasy Chopstick for lunch, dinner, or our happy hour special from 3 to 7 Monday through Friday. Buy one Jaeger sake bomb. Get the second for a dollar.
Very good. That was reorganization. Yeah. Yeah, you guys are doing good. You guys are doing really good. This next segment is called The Top 5 Google Searches of This Show, Still Called Stab. Everyone on panel, this next segment's called Top 5 Google Searches of. In celebration of Pixar's upcoming release, Finding Dory, please compose the top 5 Google searches from the perspective of your favorite Pixar character, one at a time. We'll start with Ben Feldman.
These are the top 5 Google searches of Wally.
Okay. That was... Oh.
That's hard to do. But you know, when he's typing, he's thinking in his own voice. So here goes.
One at a time.
Oh, okay.
You do one, then.
I shouldn't read 3 at a time, John?
Correct. Yeah, if you can't.
Would people give a crap about me if I didn't have sad robot eyes?
Very good, Ben. Very good. Ms. Hyatt.
I decided to go with classic fan favorite Woody from Toy Story.
All right.
Mm. Yeah. First one. Why does Andy laugh every time he says my name?
That's a kid? That's a kid, right?
Yes. Well, this is a fun coincidence. Because I also chose Wally.
All right. Uh-oh.
And we're going to see
I
how these differ.
I almost chose
Wally. Oh, that's good. So, they're going to be similar, but they're going to be different. So, Wally's first search.
One at a time.
One at a time, please.
I'm not going to do like 3 or 4. You'll probably get the joke, though.
Same joke. Okay.
First search from Wally.
Yep.
Wally!
That's the first search. All right, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Just searching himself, a narcissistic robot. Well, good.
Yeah. I had that, but I scratched it out.
Did you?
No.
Okay. Ben, you're second of 5.
What?
Yeah, top 5 Google searches. This would be your second of 5, yes.
Is this white lacy contraption for slinging titties or a blindfold for my robot face?
Okay. Shahara.
How to remove a tattoo from the bottom of my foot.
Very good. Jesse.
Again, this was awful close to Ben's. Wally's second search.
Wally.
All right. Ben, third.
You should read mine with that voice. Eve, upskirt pics.
Shahara.
Sex scene supercut of Brokeback Mountain HD.
I was really hoping there wouldn't be this kind of crossover, that we wouldn't that we wouldn't overlap this much. Wally's third search.
Wally.
All right.
I don't know if you remember the movie.
I do.
It was like the first two.
There's subtle differences.
My turn.
Ben, yes, 4th of 5.
Ratatouille. BitTorrent in HD. You're like a fucking ghost.
This is fun. Shahara, sorry.
Talking umbilical cord?
Nice.
Jesse.
Number 4?
Yep.
5.
This is the 4th of 5?
No, you're going to be 5.
Oh, yeah. You
yeah,
said.
Yeah.
I hope my 4, like I'm not stealing your number 5. My number 4.
I hope not to.
Wally.
Okay. Let's bring this whole thing to an end here. This last one. this segment. Let's go ahead and.
Oh, shit. I got to put my thumbprint in here. Okay, here we go. Singapore anti-national service riots.
Very good. Shahara.
Return self for cash without receipt. Al's Toy Barn.
Very good. Jesse, bring it home.
Number five.
Eva. Wally.
Oh my God. Thank God. Next segment. It's done for. That brings us to the fourth of five segments of this show. This next segment is called Movie Makeup. Here's some movie titles I made up for you guys. Please have a synopsis ready based off the provided titles. Ben Feldman, the name of your movie is called Lady Boner Jesus. Let's hear what that's about.
There's only one or two directions I could have taken this, John.
Sure.
Lady Boner Jesus is a musical drama.
Okay.
About a crotch-soppingly beautiful ninth-generation Mexican gardener named Jesus.
Okay.
And his existential tribulations. It's the beginning of the synopsis. Jesus, a crotch-soppingly beautiful ninth-generation Mexican gardener who tengas 22 años, spends día after día in La Sol Caliente and los suburbios of any southwestern town, USA, toiling over overgrown vegetables, or vegetation rather, and shrubberios, singing songs about himself in the third person that no one in his mundo can hear, but nosotros escuchar, John. Nosotros escuchar.
Okay. All right.
We can hear.
All right.
Ladies who live throughout the suburbs hire Jesus to manscape their landscapes, some with monthly or even weekly contracts, while they watch through the drapes, chests heaving, crotches sopping,
right.
Hardwood floors warping, singing songs about their lust in the third person. It's like Desperate Housewives on Broadway, John, but I'm not sure because I've never seen Desperate Housewives, the show. I've seen actual Desperate Housewives all the time, though. They all want to make love to him. He knows this and that brings him joy, for he is starved for love and feeds off their lust for his own sense of self-worth. And they fill up his cup of self-worth, that's for certain. And now to describe the conflict that will drive the narrative of the film. But his joy is bittersweet because Jesus cannot engage with the ladies or their boners, let alone fuck them hard into the night. Because the Shyamalan twist of it all, John, is Jesus does not actually exist. He never has. He probably never will, and that's what he spends most of his time moaning about in song. ¿Por qué? ¿Por qué, Dios mío? ¿Por qué give me this crotch, soppingly beautiful face and body? But at the same time, have me be just a figment of these ladies' imagination and not really exist.
Right.
And God is all, don't ask me, I don't exist either. Tamale? Shit like that, John.
All right, very good. Very good, Ben. So, very agenda heavy there. All right. Shahara, the name of your movie, Lord of the Files. Lord of the Files.
Lord of the Files. This is a movie that is exactly what it sounds like. A film adaptation of Lord of the Flies, but this time in an office setting. Just like most offices, it is run by what are essentially 6 to 12-year-old boys fighting for attention and power in a siloed strip of land that matters little to anyone but them. This film is a docudrama based on true events that could have never occurred if even one single woman was present. Because if the conflict could have been handled with emotional maturity, that's not much of a movie now, is it? All characters will be played by the 2012 cast of Les Miserables. Lord of the Files is about office workers' attempt to maintain order and civility, but failing when some unknown staff member, who they refer to as the Beast, uses the color printer for a job that could have totally been printed in black and white, resulting in chaos and brutality in search of the monster who could have done this. Someone who clearly hasn't read the Printer Ethics and Responsibilities Handbook. Ralph, the sensitive English boy and unlikely leader in the office, played by Eddie Redmayne, locks the doors and calls an emergency all-staff meeting with the novelty conch shell he got in a swag bag from a national conference he attended in Florida. Whose files are these? He demands, while holding the offending 126 pages of multiple Huffington Post articles printed entirely in color. Do you know how expensive ink is? Do you know how low we are on toner? We're already over our page limit for this year, and 122 pages? Are you fucking kidding me? We might have to let someone go. But no one steps up to take responsibility. Piggy, the whiny intellectual boy played by Russell Crowe, tries to inject some reason. Look, we're not firing anybody. We just want to know who did this so we can garnish your wages accordingly. But still, silence. Jack, the director of HR, which might as well stand for handsome renegade based on his looks and sociopathic tendencies, will be played by Hugh Jackman for obvious reasons. With the looming fear of someone getting fired on the line, Jack kills the summer intern without a word. Assuming he must be the Beast, because everyone knows it takes at least a year to learn office protocol, making him the most likely offender. Ralph, sensing the tension in that room after that murder everyone just witnessed, instructs them to go back to their cubicles, feeling the collective shame of being called a bad dog. Staff deal with the situation in various ways. Some of the older veterans create a makeshift roof over their cubicle walls using a thatch of shredded paper so they can drown out the crying and get some work done around here. Meanwhile, the office planning party committee goes to examine the color printer for clues and in their diligence accidentally break the protective layer over the ink cartridges, spraying cyan, magenta, yellow, and key all over their faces. Wasting no time at all, they spread their war paint and burst into dance singing, kill the beast, cut his throat, spill his blood, save the office money. Bored, the office IT guy creates an electrical fire to try and set off the smoke alarm, hoping he can just go home early today. In a grief-stricken stupor, the new receptionist goes to the dead intern's cubicle to create an impromptu memorial and finds that his computer wasn't even linked to the printer yet. The beast is still on the loose. Just then, the conch shell calls everyone back together for another emergency all-staff meeting. Look, I know office morale is low. Let's just talk about it. I want everyone to close their eyes and picture the work environment in which they would most effectively be able to contribute to the company mission. No, yells Jack. Talking about our feelings is gay. We must find, hunt, and kill the person who did this. You know, they say murderness is close to manliness, says the communications department. The office planning party are already dancing behind Jack, singing, kill the beast, cut his throat, spill his blood, save the office money. Ralph, the bureau chief, has clearly lost all control if he ever had any to begin with. But now the smoldering electrical fire has made its way to the shredded paper cubicle, catching the attention of the local fire department, who come bursting in the door because they don't have a staff key card to get in. In a brief moment of unity, department employees follow fire drill procedures and head outside. "This is the real deal," one person says excitedly. Once the flames are extinguished and the body of that summer intern who no one can quite remember the name of has been removed, the staff return to the world of the living, remember who they are, and realize they may never know who made that egregious printing error, but the beast was inside them all along.
Very good, Shara.
Thank you.
Very good. Jesse Jones.
That's a full treatment.
I wrote a screenplay.
Trademark Jesse Jones Industries. Mine now.
Jesse Jones. The name of your movie. Cramps. Cramps.
With an exclamation.
With an exclamation point.
Cramps isn't actually a movie yet. As of right now, Cramps is just the longest running drag review show in the greater Reno, Sparks, Nevada area. Every first Friday of the month, the ladies of Cramps take the stage of the Copa in the Sands Regency for another high-impact, glitter-jam-packed, fully tucked-back edition of Cramps. This month's show features the lip-sync stylings of crowd favorite Rita Hayworth and Ms. Chandelier, giving you Celine face and Beyonce realness. Chandelier and Rita Hayworth don't leave a dry seat in the house. And look out, bitches, because it's about to get shady up in her when Her Majesty Ms. Fish of the Day read the house down on this room full of hog bodies. Fish of the Day is the shadiest bitch this side of Lake Tahoe. And you, when you step into her library, you better hold on to your lace front. Cramps! 7 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Only at the Copa at the Sands Regency. With a special guest appearance from Reno's original queen bitch, 88-year-old Nickel Slot. Nickel Slot gonna wow the Copa crowd with her world-famous pool cue trick. When you want a good room in Reno, you go to the Sands Regency. When you want a good time in Reno, you go to Cramps.
Very good. That was movie makeup. That's what that was.
I want to see that movie.
This brings us to our final segment of the first show here. This next segment's called Write an Erotic Poem About It. Please have written an erotic poem in regards to the following topics. Ben Feldman, we're going to start with you. Again, please have written an erotic poem in regards to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
So last time I did stab, and every other time I've ever written an erotic poem, it always ends up coming out sounding like slam poetry for some reason. Cuban Missile Crisis, scarier than ISIS. Nothing sexual about that. The fuck there ain't. This shit's sexy like my motherfucking taint.
Very good.
Slathered in paint. Don't look because you'll faint. Absolutely zero rhyming dictionary restraint. You got the launch codes. Who's got the launch codes? You got the launch codes. I'll give you the launch codes. I'll put them in your mouth. Yeah, mushroom cloud. A la motherfucking modes. Kennedy and Khrushchev, Bay of Pigs, after sex, smoking cigs. Ballistic missile deployment televised. Full-scale nuclear war, like cum in your eyes. American Jupiter ballistic missiles, 90 miles off the shore of Flo. Fidel Castro, fucking little hoes. Back in the USSR, oh, you don't know how lucky is, yo. Military blockade. cum-soaked streets like a proud fucking parade. JFK in the bed, shot of jizz to the head. Get Jackie on the line. Castro's getting horny and we're running out of time. United Nations verification agreement, direct provocation. F'd up nation. Anal cream pie with civil rights on top. Moscow, Washington hotline, tense negotiations, climax reached.
Very, very good, Ben. Feldman, very good.
Another agenda.
Another agenda, heavy poem. Shahara, please have written an erotic poem in regards to marine biology. Marine biology.
The title of this poem is, "The ocean didn't even have crabs until I came along." I'm looking at 70% of your round, supple body, the part that glistens and ripples when touched. It is these parts I want to be deep inside, this heavenly body. You see, the earth is one mother I'd like to fuck. I want to see what's beneath the surface, discovering unexplored areas where no man has ever been. You ever fucked a sea anemone? Enemies no longer. I'd phytoplankton for you. I want to dive deep and touch your rocky bottom, making your extinct volcanoes erupt with my seamount. It is for the ocean that my own conch shell aches. But if we cannot be together in this life, bury me at sea.
That almost made me cry at the end. Very good, Shahara. Very good. Very good. Jesse Jones, in this first show with an erotic poem about steak and eggs. Steak and eggs.
I was actually sort of inspired by Ben's last appearance. Because I hadn't done any sort of slam in a while. And for some reason, when I saw steak and eggs, it reached something inside me that I didn't even know was there. This was supposed to be erotic, but it got a little real. This piece is called Farm to Fork to Failing Our Future. Steak! Strip, tube, T-bone. You call it a mouthful, but it's not as filling as you think. Nothing more than dick on a plate. Patriarchy with a side of subjugation. Soft, delicate, fragile eggs. Beat them. Fry them. Scramble them up. Not turning out how you planned. Some simple flaw you just can't stand. These eggs that you've poached from this unwilling hen. Just scrape them off. Dump them out. Let the disgusting mess dribble into the trash and simply try again. You bring your tough, veiny steak to the table and what? Expect my fresh eggs to just welcome their juices. My body is not your buffet. Your body is not my sole form of nourishment. Once steak accepts eggs as an important part of this balanced breakfast, then and only then will this nook know peace. True peace. Steak and eggs on ciabatta. And the cheese of love and respect melting over us both, making us whole, filling our bodies, filling our soul. Does anybody know a good late night breakfast place? I'm starving and angry now.
Very good. Very good. That's the end of the first show, Stab. One more time for Ben Feldman. Woo! Yeah, Shahara Hyatt. Jesse Jones. All right. We'll be right back in 3 minutes with one more show of Stab for you. If you'd like to hear more Stabs, you can go to our iTunes or you can go to our online outlet called www.stabforgold.com. check us out on Twitter at Stab Show. Yeah, we'll be right back.